Okay. Tonight is Wednesday night, December 12th. This is the Women's Mishnah Gemara Shir. We're in the middle of Sukkah, Sugyot in Masech HaSukkah. And we're in the middle of the topic of Oisik B'mitzvah Patam and HaMitzvah. Okay, Rabotai. We resume again our study of the topic of Oisik B'mitzvah Patam and HaMitzvah. And we've had two shiurim thus far on it, and tonight there are several more important halachic issues to understand. But tonight we're going to take a little detour and see what might be the rationale as to why ein oseik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah. Why is it that if somebody is engaged in one mitzvah, is he exempt from another mitzvah, and how far does the exemption go? It's also okay, so we're going to start with on page one. Unusual, we're starting on page one tonight, and it's not associated with any football play or anything like that. That's all. Yeah, number one doesn't. Yeah, just means number one. We're going to start with a Rambam in his Perush on the Mishnah in Masechet Avot. At the beginning of the second perek of Masechet Avot, the Mishnah tells us that Heve Zahir b'mitzvah kala kibachamura, that one should be attentive, careful for, I'll translate it loosely, a less severe mitzvah, just as much as you would for a severe mitzvah, kala and chamura. It's a little difficult to translate it well in the context of a mitzvah, but that's what the Mishnah says. So we're going to see how the Rambam interprets that Mishnah, and he, Rambam, will identify that the principle of Oseik B'mitzvah Patur min ha-mitzvah gets its roots from this particular Mishnah, at least according to his interpretation of it. But the Mishnah says, Heve Zahir B'mitzvah Kala Kibachamura. Be careful, be attentive to a simple or light mitzvah as much as a serious mitzvah. Says the Rambam, Achakach, Amar, Shira'ui lehizaher b'mitzvah, Shiyechashev ba shihi kala. You should be careful with a mitzvah which you think is what? Is a simple mitzvah. Kigom. Simchat HaRegel, the mitzvah of rejoicing during the Chag. Not a terribly difficult mitzvah to observe, and doesn't seem like that it has tremendous prominence. I don't know what he means, kala, but it's very easy. And look at the second example that he gives. Ulemeidat Lashon Kodesh. Wow, yes, the Rambam believes that there is a mitzvah to study Hebrew language. Yes, the Rambam believes there's such a mitzvah to study Hebrew language. But he might interpret that as a simple mitzvah. We all went through Hebrew in high school, and some of us in college. Oh, it was such a joke. Now, I wouldn't say it was I wouldn't say it was easy. I wouldn't say it's a mitzvah kala if I, you know, I certainly wouldn't say it. But, you know, foreign languages were never a big hit in yeshiva education. So anyhow, v'lemeidat lashon ha-kodesh. U'b'mitzvah shehitba'ara chumrata. And a mitzvah where the severity of that mitzvah has been articulated, has been explained. Kimo, mila v'tzitzis u'shchitas Pesach. A mitzvah such as circumcision, mila, tzitzis, and shchitas Pesach. Now, I can understand if the Rambam would write mila and shchitas Pesach. There, the chumrah, the severity of that mitzvah, has been documented in the Chumash. Namely, they are the only two positive commandments for which failure to observe is a punishment documented in the Chumash. You get karet for each of those. But for the rest of the 246 mitzvot aseh, there is no punishment articulated in the Chumash if you fail to observe them. So it's a little difficult to understand why tzitzis suddenly has been thrown into that mix. It's a significant mitzvah because it's supposed to remind you about all mitzvot of Hashem, but lots of mitzvot have various philosophical underpinnings and so on and so forth. But that's a little difficult to attribute significance and identify it as chamor, as a serious mitzvah. V'sham sibat zeh she'ein ata yodea matan scharan. So, why am I telling you to observe Simchat HaRegel and learning Hebrew language in the same way that you are committed to Shechitas HaPesach and Migla? Because we really have no clue as to what the reward was or is for any particular mitzvah. Ubiyar zeho inyan, and the explanation of this is kemosha asaper, as I will tell you right now. Vize shehatorah kula mimane mitzvot asay umitzvot lo tase. The Torah is replete with positive commandments and negative commandments. Amnam mitzvot lo tase, however, negative commandments. Hine bi'er hakatuv ha'onesh al kol achat mehen. The Torah has stipulated the punishment for transgressing every lotase milvad hame'at, with the exception of a handful of them where the Torah has it. V'chayav biktzatan mitot. For some of them, there are punishments administered in Bezdin, right? We say it on Yom Kippur, Arba Mises Bezdin, Skila, Sreifa, Hereg, and Chenek. Ubiktsat, and some of them are, it says black on white, V'nichrita ha-nefesh ahi me'amea. That's karet. And what karet is, has not been specified in the Torah, at least most times, and therefore it leads to some speculation. One theory of what karet represents is, it's because there is one time in Parshat Kedoshim where the penalty of karet is listed, but the Torah uses a secondary expression, aririm yihiyu. Aririm. Aririm means childless. That if you are chay of karet for that particular transgression, it's one of the incestuous relationships in Parshat Kedoshim, it says you're going to be childless. Okay? That's what some say that it means. That's all the every single time. Others say that karet is you're going to die before age 60. A third explanation is that you're going to die before the amount of allotted years that HaKadosh Baruch Hu initially planned. Every year, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides whether you're going to live another year or another 2 years. So, if you engage in a transgression, Shiesh Bo Kares, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will reduce that particular number. So, those are where it says Karet. Then there is another category called Mita Bidei Shamayim. It doesn't say Karet. It does not say Karet. But it says the word yumat once instead of mot yumat. Whenever the Torah uses the word mot yumat, that is death implemented by a bezdin of Am Yisrael. Mot yumat. If it says yumat, it means misa bidei shamayim. Heaven will make you die. So what's the difference between heaven will make you die and karet? It's both implemented by God. I don't have a good handle what exactly is the difference. But sometimes the Torah, most often when the penalty of death is, it says mot yumat. It says that by Shabbos. Mechaleleha mot yumat. The one who desecrates the Sabbath shall be put to death. And there are for Shabbos it happens to be skila. You are stoned if you are Mechal Shabbos. But Misa Bidei Shamayim is if it's written once, just the word Yumat. So that's another time how the Torah stipulates. And then, of course, Malkus, lashes. That's the most common punishment associated with transgression of a lav. The rule of thumb is, every single time that the Torah writes a lav and does not stipulate a death penalty, the punishment is correct. Every single time. It's makot. Every single time. Unless it falls into a certain category for which there is no punishment despite the fact that it violates a lav. For example, lav she'ein bo ma'aseh. Any transgression, biblical transgression, that does not involve an action, there is no punishment for that. For example, we all talk Lashon Hara. Lashon Hara is a serious offense. The Chafetz Chaim identifies 8 lavim every single time you talk or listen to Lashon Hara. 8. Yes. 8 psukim he cites. However, none of them are associated with punishment because it's only a violation of speech. And the rule is, there is someone who disagrees with it in the Gemara, Rabbi Yehuda, but we paskin, lav she'ein bo ma'aseh, ein lokin alav. Or, alav hanitein litashlumin. Anytime you violate a transgression, but the Torah demands that you make compensation. For example, I steal something for you. So I violated lo tigzol. But if I don't, but I don't get lashes for violating lo tigzol. Why? Because the Torah says, give it back, pay it back. And wherever there is tashlumin, there is no punishment by bet din. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do whatever he has to do. So all of those happen to be the punishments which the halacha, which the Torah itself stipulates. V'yodanu min ha'onshin mitzvat lo ta'aseh kulan. And we now can figure out from the basis of the punishment the relative severity of each of the lavim, negative transgression. Mahein isuro chamur u'mahein limatal mizeh. Which ones are the very severe punishments and what is in a category below? So, number one, anything where the punishment is death by bet din is the most severe offense. If there is a death penalty implemented by heaven, that's a lower category. If there is just a lav, no death penalty, that's a lower category. And the halacha takes this seriously, this gradation. It does. I'll give you a classic example. Somebody takes ill on a Shabbat morning. And the doctor says, this patient must have meat. And I have two choices. I have no kosher meat available right now. So I have two choices. I can give him non-kosher meat, which I have right here in the kitchen, for some strange reason. But I have non-kosher meat. Or I can go shech the cow and give him kosher meat. So many Rishonim are of the opinion that you always violate hakal tchila. You take the less severe offense and then in order to address your crisis. So according to those opinions, I would give the person treifa meat. I would give him treifa meat. Because treifa meat is only a lav. And the punishment is only lashes. Of course, you won't get lashes because the doctor said to have them. But there is no license under those circumstances to shecht an animal where the penalty for shechita on Shabbos is skila. So the halacha plays with this idea. The Rambam, in this particular case, disagrees, and he says, his famous line is, that when somebody is sick on Shabbos, Harehu kichol l'chol hadvarim. Treat it like a weekday. Now, if it was a weekday, I would never have a havamin of giving him tray for meat. I'm not talking about he's going to die unless you give him a piece of meat. Of course you give him the tray for meat. But if I have the option for time, of course I go ahead and shecht it, give him kosher meat. And that's why, so that the Rambam, but many disagree with the Rambam, and they say, you weigh each lav, and it's hakal, hakal tchila. The same thing is about eating on Yom Kippur. Somebody is taken ill, and he has to eat on Yom Kippur. What should you give him on Yom Kippur? So give him something where there is only maybe an Isur Aseh against eating it or something, but not a lav. If the but don't do the maximum of shechting. So this gradation is taken seriously in halacha. V'heim shmonu madregot, and according to Rambam, there are 8 categories in this hierarchy. Because the Rambam will see, you'll see in a second, each one of the death penalties is a separate category, and he writes. Here we are. Hamadrega harishona vehi hachamura shebehen, the first category and the most severe, heim hadvarim asher chayav behem skila, the punishment of skila. So chilul Shabbos is skila. That's the most avodah zarah is skila. Vahamadrega shelemato mizu, the next one, second on the severe list, is sreifa. If a person is guilty of something for which the death penalty is burning, what they do is they pour hot lead down your throat. It's not pretty. In fact, some people feel that that is more severe than getting stoned. There's a machloikis. But the Rambam says skila is the most severe. Vahashlishit. And the third category, mechuyavei hereg, those people who are beheaded. That's what hereg is. The harivit, and the fourth level category is mechuyavei chenek, people who are choked to death. They tie 2 ropes around you, and they each guy pulls on the other end, and they choke you to death. So those are the first 4 categories. So if I had to, in halacha, make a choice between violating something for which there is skila or chenek, violate the thing that is for chenek and not the thing for skila. That's 5. That's 4. V'hachamishit, mechuyavei karet. V'hashishit, mechuyavei misav bedei shamayim. V'hashviit, mechuyavei malkus. V'hashminit, Lavin she'ein lokin aleihen. All negative prohibitions for which there are no lashes. I gave you 2 categories for which there are 2 lashes. No, there are no malchus. Umeile hamadregot. And from these 8 categories, neida godel hachet vikotno. What will I now be able to determine how severe a transgression it is, and how less severe a transgression it is. So we are fortunate, says the Rambam, that we know, because the Torah itself provides that. Aval mitzvot asei lo nitba'er sachar kol achat mehen mahu etzel Hashem. By mitzvot asei, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has not given us any clue, except for a handful, what exactly is the reward offered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the performance of that deed? Ad sheneida mehen, mahen yoter chashuv, umahen lematamiseh. So I have no way of determining which mitzvah is more significant and which mitzvah is not as significant. So therefore, elot siva, what did God command us? La'asot ma'asei ploni uploni. He told us to do A, B, C, D, E, F until 248. Lo nitba'er schar achat mehen. Lo yivida is a schar mishneh yoter gadol etzel Hashem. We have no idea which one God considers more significant. Ulefikach, ra'ui lehishtadel bekulan. Therefore, I should be very careful with all of them. That's how he explains, he zaharu b'mitzvah kala kibachamura. Now the Rambam's going to make a statement, and I want you to infer something from the Rambam. Because this inference is going to be assumed by others who read this Rambam, and are going to attack him. They disagree with him based on his inference. So I'm going to read something to you now, and now you tell me the inference that you draw. Based on what I just told you, this fundamental principle, that there is no way of knowing what mitzvah is more significant than another one. Therefore, Amru, the rabbis have said, Ha'osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah.
Because you don't know what the reward is for one or the other. You can't choose to do this one or that one. I have no idea which is considered more important or less important.
Good. So the Rambam is telling you good advice. Good advice. The halakha is telling you good advice. You know what? Why would you ever stop doing mitzvah A in order to move to mitzvah B? You may have taken away, you may have departed from a mitzvah for which God considers one of his top heavy favorites, and he's going to reward you incredibly, right? Right? I'm still waiting tonight. I got my lottery ticket for tonight, right here. I'm just waiting for that. I always have it, so every Wednesday night. And as a result, you're going to go to a mitzvah for which you're not going to get Yankee tickets. Also worth something. But not winning $239 million lottery. So why would you ever think of going from one mitzvah to the next? So I want you to think of an inference from this Rambam as how he explained Oisik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. I want you to think about an inference from the Rambam's explanation and tell me what conclusion would you reach from your inference. Think about the Rambam's logic. What did he just say? Because I spent all this time outlining for you what is the difference between mitzvah saseh and mitzvah lo taseh.
Depends whether you're doing mitzvah aseh or lo taseh.
There's no such thing as oisik b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah by a lo
taseh.
It's only by a mitzvah saseh.
Okay.
But what conclusion could you reach from Rambam?
That's for the mitzvah, there are no rewards.
So just broaden it. Okay. If I were to know
the rewards
for particular, so then what halacha would be canned? Osik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah would be canned. Why? If I'm starting to do this mitzvah, and then suddenly that mitzvah is far more significant. Who cares about this mitzvah?
Because there's a ranking for the reward.
Exactly. If there were a ranking for the mitzvah, then I would withdraw my claim of Isaac for mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah.
Maybe they won't want you to do that anyway, because that's what would be one second.
We're just reading the Rambam. What did the Rambam say? The Rambam, I would never have thought of bringing in a halachic statement of Isaac for mitzvah to mitzvah in Pirkei Avos. That's not what I would have done. I would not have associated the principle of Isaac b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah, with a Mishnah in Masechet Avot, which typically are not halacha driven. They're nice, they're important, beautiful ideas, but not halachic driven. And here the Rambam's putting in a halachic drive to explain a principle which the Gemara spends a lot of time on. Isaac b'mitzvah. And the Rambam's telling you, why Isaac b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah? Why? Because you have no way to weigh it. So don't go jumping to another mitzvah. Inference. If indeed I had such a ranking that the Torah itself would explicitly state that this mitzvah is to be rewarded for X, Y, and Z, then I should. And your point, Susie, there are a half a dozen mitzvot where there is a reward stipulated in the Torah. Everybody knows the famous two. Arichat Yamin for what? Kibur Avayim. Shiluach HaKeim. Nobody remembers the third mitzvah of the Torah,
which has the same Laman Yerichon Yerecha. It's chapter 25 of Sefer Devarim. Even Shlema. Accurate weights and measurements. Yes. The Torah writes, Laman Yerichon Yerecha, Allah Adam Asher, Hashem Elokecha Noseila. To act for a storekeeper to have accurate weights and measures. So the Torah writes that. Torah writes that. The Harachta Yamim. So maybe for those three, I might say, you know what? I have to go be. I'm in the middle of Gemilas Chesed, and I went to visit somebody in a hospital. And my father calls me. Can you give me a glass of tea? Goodbye, Mister. Drop dead in the hospital. I care about you. I'm going home to give my father a glass of tea because that's a Richus Yamim. That's the conclusion that people reach from the Rambam, and it's accurate. If you follow the line of thinking of the Rambam, that's exactly what he said. And others can't stomach that. Think there's got to be a much more compelling reason as to why Oisik b'mitzvah patam and amitzvah. So now we move to page number 2. Yes?
I just want clarification.
Go right ahead.
About
the reward, the inference would be that you jump from one to the other.
Like you just said, with getting
the tea. Yeah, right. That's the conclusion I would reach from the Rambam.
Okay.
That if I know, let's assume the reward of longevity in Eretz Yisrael is one of the highest rewards you could possibly dream for. And then...
Oh, that's true. Re-equipment doesn't mean that that's the ultimate rate. Right.
We don't know.
Yeah,
because okay. Most of the rewards which God has promised us are not in Olam Hazeh. They're in Olam Haba. Mm-hmm. And Olam Haba. So, you know...
Right,
but when you have a mitzvah of where there is Olam Ha, where there is a reward in this world, that's a pretty significant reward to leap for. Pretty significant.
You know, many Amoraic sages have been willing to trade their Olam Haba for something in Olam Hazeh. Especially their children. Yeah. Rabbi Yochanan said that. Mm-hmm. He predeceased all 10 of his children. And when his 10th child died, he lost his marbles. He couldn't take it anymore. And the students, they tried to be menachem him, to comfort him, couldn't accept the nechama. And he said, that's the famous Niv, lo mi duf sheikh, v'lo mi uktzeich. I don't want your honey, and I don't want your sting. I'll trade all of my olam haba for one of my children. For one of my children, said Rabbi Yochanan. One. So it's a difficult read according to the Rambam. We're now going to turn to page 2, which is a comment on Masechet Avot. He called the comment Magen Avot, which is a nice way of calling it, and it's authored by the Tashbates. Tashbates was one of the late Rishonim, and he wrote Shelot Utshuvot, not terribly well known, the Tashbates, but in scholarly circles, people have heard and they take his writing series, particularly in his Shelot Utshuvot. Says the Tashbates on the bottom of the page, bracketed. Vani Omer Shelo Natan Tam Zeh El Da'atan Shel Briyot Shehem Ratzim La Asot HaMitzvot Menei Sheyekablu Alein Schar. He's talking about the Rambam. Why did the Rambam say this business? Because there are a lot of people who only do mitzvot for one reason, to get the reward. So the Rambam had to guide people and say, so the Mishnah had to guide people. Have a zahir b'mitzvah kala kibachamura. Be very careful, because you never know what the actual reward is. V'zeh l'mishi yesh biyado shtei mitzvot la'asot, somebody who now has the possibility of doing two mitzvot, She'ein biyado mishkal. Nobody has a scale. Eizo chamura, the eizo kala. Which one is severe? Which one is not as important? V'yehezoriz b'cholachat mehen. Aval mishehu osek b'mitzvot ein anu tzrichim l'ta'am zeh. But for people who are really zoriz, careful about shmirat ha-mitzvot, we don't need this reason about what? About what? About weighing things. And that's the reason why osek b'mitzvah patam min ha-mitzvah. He, Rambam, he quotes in his previous paragraph, beginning of the paragraph, he quotes the Rambam. And he asks the Rambam the following question. We've read multiple sources about osek b'mitzvah patam min ha-mitzvah. We read lots of cases. Remember the shliach mitzvah cases, guys who were traveling across the country and stayed in Motel 6 on during the night as they were traveling. Not once did the Gemara ever comment and say, you know what? You only don't do the second mitzvah if you don't know the reward. If the Rambam was right, the Gemara should have said, made a qualification. Osek b'mitzvah, patam in ha-mitzvah, if we don't know the reward. Perhaps if we know there is a reward for a mitzvah, which is a great reward, maybe osek b'mitzvah, eino patam mi mitzvah. Go to the next one. The Rambam never said, the Gemara never said that. Therefore, Rambam, you're wrong. The halach of osek b'mitzvah, patam mi ha-mitzvah has nothing to do with reward. But rather, what does he say? And I continue now. It's three lines from the bottom. Lefi shehoved et Adonav, ein mutelet alav avoda acheret, bo'et shehu oved ota. When you are a slave and your master gives you a directive, he knows very well that what is your responsibility at this precise moment? To do this action which he told you. You have no obligation to do what? A second chore that you might think the master wants you to do. No. He tells you to do something. What do? You engage in that activity until it's completed. V'im heiniach ota avoda. And if you left your master's assignment, afal pi shehi kala, even though in your eyes it appears less significant, mipnei avoda acheret, from another possible chore that the master has given you. So if he asks you to go ahead, okay, can you shine my shoes? But he also has another one, I want you to clean the kitchen, because we're having company tonight. Clean the dining room. So you're going to say, all right, cleaning the dining room is much more important. We're having a steak dinner tonight. So I'll leave the shoes for some other time. Says the Tashbetz, that's not what the master told you to do. He told you to shine the shoes. So what happens? Hare zilzel ba'avoda. Shehi biyado. He has cheapened, devalued the activity which he is doing now. V'im heshlima. And if he v'lo hishgiach lavoda acheres, hare hishlim ritzon aviv kara'ui. If you do exactly what you are told, not jump to what you think is the more serious thing, that is exactly what your master wants you to do. And it's the same thing with the Ribono Shel Olam. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do mitzvah A, even though there is a possibility to do mitzvah B, right now HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks you to do mitzvah A. Why don't you go and do another mitzvah? It has nothing to do with reward. Even if the second mitzvah is far more rewarding, makes no difference. It is a demonstration for your master's will. Your master said, do this, now encounters another mitzvah. The master didn't ask you to do it. The master asked you to do A. Finish up A before you move on to something else. That's how the Tashbetz explains the rationale of Osek b'mitzvah, patam min ha-mitzvah. And in fact, if you go now for a second to page 7 for a minute. the Ritva is going to put it in a far more serious language of Oseik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. Far more serious than that. Because if you were just asked to explain the consequences of the law, Oseik b'mitzvah, patur min ha-mitzvah. So what does patur mean? What does patur mean?
Excuse.
You're excused, exactly. Now, if I don't want to take advantage of your excuse, exactly, so I go to the other one. Didn't say I'm not allowed to. It says patur. Patur means you're excused. The Ritva is going to read it, asur. Asur. Let's read it inside.
This is in his commentary on Masechah Sukkah, on the blot, which we were studying, Daf Chafei and Sukkah.
Where it says, Shluchei mitzvah p'turim min ha-sukkah. Perush, mishum de'osek b'mitzvah p'turim min ha-mitzvah. U'maisi la b'gemara mikra. And the Gemara derived it from Sukkot. There were two sets of circumstances. Remember, it was the Pasuk in Kriyat Shema, b'shiftecha, b'veisecha, only when you're doing your activity should you read the Shema. But if you're doing heaven work, you were exempt from the reading of the Shema. Or we learned it out from those people who were tamei l'nefesh adam, and that they couldn't bring the Korban Pesach. Well, they shouldn't have buried that guy until after Pesach. Let the guy, wait until after Pesach, and we can bring the Korban Pesach. So the Gemara brought Pesukim. V'teima. Dohavadai lo amru ha'osek b'mitzvah patam in ha-mitzvah ela b'shi'i efshar l'kayim shtem. Everybody says that the principle of Oseik B'mitzvah is only where you couldn't have done both. We will have a whole shiur next week and see, not everybody agrees with what he just said. There are people who say Oseik B'mitzvah is patur min ha-mitzvah even if you can do both. There are three opinions. We're going to read them inside.
You said that Montel 6.
What?
You said about Montel 6 instead of just reading.
Correct. Rashi's going to be one of them. But Rashi's joined by lots of others. So we're not going to elaborate now. But, so that's what he said. His opinion is, it's obvious that this halacha is only when you can't do both. Ki ba'odo b'sukkah, o shemaniyah, when somebody's in the sukkah, or he's wearing tefillin, o shemis'atev b'tzitzis, O sheyesh mezuzah b'pischo, ain lepokro mikol ha-mitzvos. Mean to tell me a guy who's in the sukkah for 7 days doesn't have to daven? Because he's doing a mitzvah. A guy has a mezuzah on his door doesn't have to do any mitzvahs because he knocked in the mezuzah on the door. He's playing that, that's a real extreme exaggeration. But if I'm wearing tzitzis, I don't have to do any mitzvahs because I am the kind of mitzvah tzitzis. So that's ridiculous. Umasha Amru. Okay, so he gets off on a tangent as he often does. So I want you to skip for a second to line four, where it says, Lomali, 6-7 words before the end of line four, asks the Ritva, Lomali Kra, why do you need a pasuk to tell me, Osek b'mitzvah patur min ha-mitzvah? Pshita. Why should I ever consider the possibility that what? Leave mitzvah one to do the other one. I'll tell you what the pasuk is telling me. The hakamashmon, this is what it's teaching us. Even if you want to leave mitzvah A, small time mitzvah, to perform a big time mitzvah, you have no right to do so. No right? And that fits in very well with the philosophy of the Tashbins. Why do I have no right to leave mitzvah A? Why? Because God told you right now to do mitzvah A. So don't tell the Rabbi Shem, I have a more important thing to do for you. Kodesh Baruch is not interested in what you can do for me. I want you to do one thing. Listen to what I tell you to do. I told you to do mitzvah A. Therefore, says the Ritva, despite the fact that it says patur, do not read the word patur like we normally mean patur. That you don't have to. You're exempt. Right? You're exempt. Don't read that. In this case, osek b'mitzvah means you are not osek b'mitzvah. Asur la'asot mitzvah acher. You are not allowed to engage in another mitzvah. Yes.
Then how do you get past what you just said with the sukkah mitzvahs and
Because he says it's only when you the whole idea is only when you can't do both. But if you can do both, the principle doesn't apply. So if I'm sitting in the sukkah, can I still daven?
Yeah.
Of course. Can I still bench? Yes.
I think it's great. It's really important. This is a fundamental part of Judaism. Also, don't think that if you could try to figure out what Hashem wants and therefore you cannot do what's at hand because you think probably this is more important. Just like a master and a slave. Don't try to...
No, but he's saying even if I knew which ones God think are more important.
But the point
even
is,
if I knew...
There's so many other factors.
It's only one factor according to the Tashbetz. God told you to do this right now. That's all. Nothing else.
Right, and therefore...
But I can understand why you want to
don't try to outthink it.
Don't try to outthink it. Yes.
So what about a situation when you're sitting in your sukkah, you're doing whatever you're doing in the sukkah, and you go, I got to go to shul for Marv. So the mitzvah of sitting in the sukkah or going to shul to be part of the minyan. So then...
That's a good question. Am I exempt from davening b'tzibur in order to continue to fulfill the mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur? It's a good question. I'm sitting in the sukkah. It's a good question.
Does the mitzvah say go for every minute of
yes. sukkah? Right. We are unfortunately, we have reduced the mitzvah of sukkah to either just eating or to holy people sleeping as well. That's what it is. Sleeping. The Mishnah's conception of living in the sukkah means the Gemara, the Mishnah gives the example litayel basuka. You take out the chairs and you walk around the table. You do your laps in the sukkah. You learn in the sukkah. You read your newspaper. You read your book in the sukkah. You're living there for 7 days. So you necessarily could ask that question. We of course will tell people, of course you don't marvel in a minute. Of course, you leave the sukkah to daven. There's no doubt, and it's based on a halacha. The halacha is teshvu ke'ein taduru. You're supposed to live in the sukkah in the exact same way which you live in your house. Well, in your house, do you go out to shul? Yeah, so you go out of the sukkah too. That's the way. That's the golden rule. So, but here the Ritva is doing something very bold. He's prohibiting you to go to another mitzvah. Prohibiting you. That's normally not the simple read of Isaac b'mitzvah, Pater min ha-mitzvah. This will also be sharpened in another statement. If you now go to page 4. This is a comment of the Taz on the following halacha in Masechet Brachot. The Mishnah in Masechet Brachot on Daf Tes Zayin Omer Aleph teaches us that the employer's time has to be treated incredibly seriously. If you are working for someone else, the employer is entitled to maximum efficiency of time. So much so that the Gemara says, so much so that if he gives you lunch hour and you bring your brown baguette like we all used to do and have either peanut butter and jelly or jelly and peanut butter, whichever one, that's you used to alternate. One day was jelly and peanut butter, the other day is peanut butter and jelly. So under those circumstances, you do not recite the complete Birchat HaMazon. You say the first bracha, then you have an abridged
combination of the second and third bracha, and you omit the fourth bracha completely. That's the halacha in the Mishnah, quoted by the Rambam in the Shulchan Aruch. Why? Because you don't become a tzaddik on somebody else's cheshbon.
You're stealing from his time.
You're stealing from his time. By making believe, I have to say the long Berchas Hamazon and say with so much kavanah, just go ahead and do the bare minimum. That's what the Mishnah says. So he's quoting now. He's going to ask the question that Taz does. Why couldn't we allow you to recite the entire Berchat Hamazon while you're working? Well, if you're a construction worker, okay, you're on a tree, okay, maybe I should concentrate a little. But if you're sitting in the office, or you're a textile worker, so say the Berchat Hamazon while you're working. Says the Taz. What? Says the Taz. It's disrespectful to a bracha and to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be doing anything else when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked you to do this. This. And the Taz says, where did I get this idea from? From Isaac B'mitzvah, Patam and HaMitzvah. If God said, when you're doing what I told you to do, you don't do another mitzvah, certainly what else don't you do? You don't do a leisurely activity, and you don't do anything which the boss tells you to do. That's considered a zilzul of a mitzvah. Zilzul of a mitzvah. It's a Mishnah.
Okay, so you're going to say, okay, don't take off the mincha. I'm just saying, it's the same thing.
No, they tell you to daven mincha. That's it.
So this particular thing, for some reason, is saying you could do the bridge thing. That's not disrespectful to Hashem to pick the bridge versus the real?
But it's a good question. But since the rabbi, I'm not debating why did the rabbis pick on this mitzvah to make an abridged version. Why? And they didn't say, you know what? Daven an abridged Shmon Esrei. Even there is such a thing as an abridged Shmon Esrei. It's called Tfilat Havinenu. There is a circumstance whereby you would recite the first three brachot of Shmon Esrei, the last three brachot of Shmon Esrei, and the middle 13, used to be 12, the middle 13 are combined into one bracha, where you say a one phrase containing the theme of what? Of each bracha. So the first phrase is Havineinu Hashem Elokeinu Lodaat Durachecha. That's it. Havineinu. Maza Havineinu. Give me some brains. Grant me some intelligence to understand your ways. Now I go to the next phrase. So each one of the phrases of the Shmon Esrei, and then you conclude Baruch Atah Hashem Shomei Tefillah. So there is such a thing as that. I don't know why the Gemara wouldn't suggest, you know what, a worker, let him say Tefillas Havineinu. It's a good question. I don't have a good answer for that. But the principle is established by Berchat Hamazon in relationship to the Gemara also quotes it in another story by Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi got up every morning well before daybreak and gave a lengthy shiur to his Talmidim before daybreak. Daybreak came and he didn't seem to stop for the recitation of Shema. It's now, yesterday's Man Creation was 9:40, it's now 9:40 and the shiur is still going. The shiur is still going. And the Talmidim asked him, Rebbe, you didn't say Shema. And you didn't give us any time to say Shema. So he said, oh, you know, when I went like this for a second, I said, Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. That's all I said. Why? I was in the middle of teaching. And I wanted to say Shema. So I just said that. I relied on the bare minimum. Sometimes the Gemara does say that. What? It's good. So many Rishonim asked that question. We did this in the Gemara in Brachas, remember? And many Rishonim say that the students, none of the students were able to sit for so many hours straight. So they went to go to the bathroom, went to have a little snack. So one, they went to have a little snack. They said Shema, exactly. And it reminded me very much, that story, about how the Rav, on the day of his yahrzeit, for his father and his mother and his wife, at night, the night of the yahrzeit, he always gave a public shiur, was called the yahrzeit shiur. Gimel Shvat, the night of Gimel Shvat. It was 3 to 4 hours, two and a half hours of halacha, and an hour and a half of drush. That was okay, only 3.5-4 hours. The next day, he fasted, and he learnt Mishnayos in accordance with the letters of his father and his mother's wife, from after davening until mincha time at 5 o'clock. Straight. Started at 9 o'clock, and went straight until 5 o'clock. Nobody in the shir, and he used to do it in the base medrash, not in the shir room, nobody could sit there. Everybody had to walk out and go to the bathroom, do this, take a break, have a coffee. He just went straight. It was just unbelievable. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did also. He started before dark, before light daybreak, and it's after Zman Kriyashma, and he's still going. It's incredible. But the Taz says, look at line 2. In the middle of line 2. Omer Rabbi Muna Zotomeret She'osu La'asot Milacha Ad She'yivarech. Until you finish benching, you're not allowed to do any work. Don't do any work while you're benching. He'etakti zeh, I decided to quote this halacha. Kidei shelo titel omer, so that you should not make a mistake and say, dafka bishat birchat hamazon asru basiyat malacha. The Gemara only discussed it where? By benching. Velo bishar brachot otfila. Elavadai gam bechol mili de mitzvot. All aspects of mitzvah. Lo ya'asok b'sicha acheret. Don't talk about anything. Don't do anything. Just do it. Just do it. And now skip a line, and it's towards the end of the fourth line. Ki zeh hu moreh al asiyato ha'asiyat ha'mitzvah b'li kavana elo derech Arai u'mikre. Derech arai, casually, and happenstance. I'm doing a mitzvah. V'zen nichlal b'ma'amar toratenu, v'im telchu imi b'keri. So go to page 5 for a minute. I'm going to show you the pasuk. And it's an incredible read. This is in Parshat Bechukotai. Parshat Bechukotai contains the first Tochecha. The Tochecha, Parsha of Chukai says, starts at the beginning. It's on the top of the page. Pasuk Gimel. In Bechukotai Teilechu, if you follow, what's going to happen? Pasuk Dalet. V'natati Gishmechem Bi'itam. There's going to be plenty of rain. Pasuk Vav. V'natati Shalom Ba'aretz. There will be peace in the land. Pasuk Zayin, Urdachtem et Oveichem, you'll be able to clear out all the Hezbollah tunnels, no problem. No problem. V'rodfu mikem chamisha mea. 5 of you will pursue 100. U'mea mikem, and 100 of you, rivavai, will chase away 10,000 of the enemy. Fine. But then it starts in Pasuk Yudalid. V'im lo tishma'u li v'lo ta'asu et kol ha'mitzvot ha'eleh. So then God says, I'm going to work with you, and so on and so forth. Now look at Chaf Aleph. V'im teilcho imi keri, Literally it means, if you're going to be what? If you're going to go with what? You're going to continue to be an action, stubborn mule, and do what? Continue. So then God says, I'm going to do a couple of other things. So the Taz darshans this in the following fashion. Im telchu imi, if you are going with me, you're doing every mitzvah that I ask you to do. But how did you do it? Bekeri, bimikra, without any thought, just doing it. You know, you're sitting there watching ESPN and you're davening Marv while you're watching ESPN. Did you ever do that, Jordan? No.
I look guilty.
No, I just want to know. If you did, if you watch, if you, do you watch ESPN?
I was going to say, I think she's picking
watch ESPN? No. Okay. So we don't have Marv. We don't have Marv when you have no ESPN. That's, you need to be careful. Why? Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told you to do something, you don't put your mind on anything else. And that's the rationale of Oisik B'mitzvah, Pater O Asur La'asot HaMitzvah. And in fact, this now will be taken in another serious halachic area. Serious halachic area.
Ask you a question about this.
Go right ahead.
Doesn't bother me? Yes. You're in the middle of benching, and yes, you have a little, let's say, grandchild in your house who needs attention. Should you keep on benching and go quickly tend to them, or should you interrupt your benching, tend to them, and then start again, continue?
No. With little kids, everything is allowed.
What would be the best thing?
The best thing is, if you can finish, that would be the best. Right. If you can't finish, I would interrupt and then continue when you...
Just continue.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm going to give you an interesting case. And let's see how you handle it, and we'll see how the Taz handles it. And it's based on this principle, which we just said. Namely, if... here's the case. A member of your family, seven relatives, passes away... in the middle of the night. Are you obligated to daven shacharis?
No,
we don't know that. Until after the kfura. Let's assume the kfura is 9 o'clock in the morning. So your status at 9 a.m. changes from an onein, who is exempt from mitzvot, to an ovel. An ovel is obligated to observe all mitzvot, except that a man doesn't put on tefillin the first day of Averis. But otherwise, every other mitzvah. So when they come home from the cemetery now,
he could still daven.
Is he obligated to daven again? Or is he obligated to daven at that time? The answer is yes, because there's still plenty of time to daven. But what happens if the kvura wasn't until Zman Tefillah today was about 10:30? The kvura wasn't finished till 10 till 11 o'clock. Do you have to daven tashlumin? Yeah. The halacha is, if there are unusual circumstances which precluded you from davening, you make up that lost mincha or shachris or ma'ariv by davening two shmona esrays at the next available opportunity. So if somebody was in the office, which I'm sure happens quite frequently today, guys at work, gals at work, and the office got very busy, and you forgot to daven mincha. When you get home, if you remember, you daven you say Shemon Esrei for Marv twice. So my question is this person who gets home from the cemetery at 11 o'clock, when he davens or she davens mincha, should they daven mincha twice?
No.
Right. But the word is that an onein is patur. So now comes the phrase, how far does the patur go? So the Taz is of the opinion that you don't have to make it up. You only have to make up something that you were obligated to do. But for some external matter, couldn't do it. You were busy in the office. You were busy with little grandchildren who were driving you nuts. And therefore you forgot to daven shachris mikhan ma'ariv. Forgot everything. I understand it. But when you're an onein, the halacha has exempt you, just you're not obligated.
So if you're not obligated, why do I have to go make it up?
And you're not allowed.
Right? Now, you're not allowed when you were an onen. But after Avelus, I could have thought, make it up.
Yeah.
But the answer is no, yeah, says the Taz.
You don't make up something in Avelus.
You don't have to. We paskin, you don't have to. Says the Taz, the same thing is true by Oisik b'mitzvah, mm-hmm. Pater min ha-mitzvah. Listen to the sharp read that he has. You know why I don't go and do another mitzvah? You know why? Because there is no other mitzvah. There's no chiyuv to do another mitzvah. Why would I want to leave a mitzvah and do something that halakhically is not called a mitzvah? When is that other activity called a mitzvah? When you're not doing anything else. But when you're doing mitzvah A, that renders all the other mitzvot in the Torah as non-obligatory at this particular time. Hence, it is ludicrous for anybody to run and do another mitzvah. And obviously, if your intention is to get a reward, you're not going to get any reward whatsoever. What do you get a reward for?
Doing
a mitzvah. But if you're not doing a mitzvah, there's no reward. So if I let the person in the hospital, because I want to give my pop, my mother, a glass of tea, I don't get any arichas yama for that. Because at the moment that I'm in the hospital, there is no mitzvah to fulfill the mitzvah. Keep it avay. That's why osek b'mitzvah pater min ha-mitzvah. It's a sharp third interpretation.
But are you allowed? Even if you don't.
No!
Can I just say something else? Because you're saying it because you want a better reward, or because maybe this is a better reward, but what if your instincts and your feeling of doing chesed, you're doing one mitzvah and then there's another mitzvah that beckons you because you really needed more for that mitzvah?
Right now, unless someone else can take care of you at the first mitzvah, you stay at the first mitzvah.
Even if the other one is more pressing and you're needed more at that.
That is correct.
But the one person in the hospital doesn't really need you there.
Maybe they do.
It is a mitzvah.
Okay.
But as far as you can see, but
okay. So that will be part of the next shiur about if there is no one else that could have done the other mitzvah.
Right, not for reward.
Well, right, I hear. It's a consideration. Not for tonight. It's a good point. So, Legis Ron and Keshela in the pocket. And next week, bring it out. Take it out of your pocket. So you have to wear the same coat, though. Because otherwise, the question will be in your closet. Yes?
But people don't actually do this. If you're visiting someone who's sick, and you're realizing, people do come to visit.
Okay, so the halacha is, if you planned on staying a half hour, don't leave after 15 minutes to do another mitzvah. Stay right there for the half hour. If the next mitzvah is still available.
Okay, so then you could go into this saying, you know, send out going to be 45 minutes, I'm just going to pay a half hour call.
Yeah, and you're allowed to leave it after a half hour. That's all, no problem. There is no other mitzvah to do. There's no other mitzvah to do. It doesn't exist. It's a very sharp read. Just as, and he makes the analogy to the onen. The onen has only one mitzvah to do: prepare for the burial. Nothing else is important at this time. So why am I going to do something? Why do I have to make up something that I didn't have to do?
Well, also the idea that's very nice, because while you're doing a mitzvah, just like having kavana when you're benching, like if you're doing it half-heartedly and you're not really in the moment and you're thinking about, then that's not really a mitzvah.
That's good. That was the previous. All right. We'll stop here. Continue next to Bach.